Introducing Bluehost Cloud, ultra-fast WordPress hosting with 100% uptime. Want a website with unmatched power, speed, and control? Of course you do. And now you can have all three with Bluehost Cloud, the new web hosting plan from Bluehost. With 100% uptime and incredibly speedy load times, your WordPress websites will be dependable and lightning fast on a global scale. Plus, your sites can handle even the biggest traffic spikes without going down or lagging. And with Bluehost Cloud, you get 24/7 WordPress priority support, meaning you're connected to WordPress experts anytime you need them. Not to mention, you automatically get daily backups and world-class security. So, what are you waiting for? Get Bluehost Cloud today by visiting Bluehost.com. That's Bluehost.com.
Welcome to Oh My Dollar, a personal finance show with a dash of glitter. Dealing with money can be scary and stressful. Here we give practical, friendly advice about money that helps you tackle the financial overwhelm. I'm your host, Lillian Kerr-Bake. Let's talk about money. So, it is health insurance season. If you are getting your health insurance through the exchange, it is time to sign up. And the deadline is December 15th, which is earlier this year than it's ever been before. So you have less time to make decisions. I know that looking for health insurance not only is a huge financial decision, for most people, it's the second largest cost that they have. It's also really confusing. And so I really want to help you figure out what you need and avoid some of the common mistakes that people make when they're shopping for health insurance. And awesomely, we have a really great guest on today. So we have Jack Hopper of Take Command Health, which is a company that helps small businesses and individual people be savvy health insurance consumers. They look through and look at various plans and can walk you through the different scenarios. And Jack is going to do that for us on the air today. Jack actually founded Take Command Health when him and his wife were expecting twins when he was just moving across the country to go to grad school. And he asked everyone trying to figure out how much it was going to cost him to have twins in the hospital, for his wife to have twins in the hospital, and nobody could even give him a ballpark answer. No doctors, hospital administrators, or insurance experts. He thought, this is really not the right solution. So he is trying to solve that, and hopefully he's going to help you try to solve your questions today, too. Jack, thank you so much for joining us, because now you work in the healthcare industry trying to make it better for small business owners. So I'm really excited to have you on.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me on. I'm excited, and there's nothing like a personal story to, you know, kind of motivate you to figure out a big problem like health insurance. And excited to kind of share some tips and tricks and learnings with the listeners today.
Awesome. Yeah, I've mentioned before on the show, but I have rheumatoid arthritis, and so I'm a really expensive person for health insurance companies, and I'm also a small business owner, so I get my health insurance through the exchange. And I didn't have health insurance for most of my 20s. It just wasn't a thing that I had access to, and trying to navigate the exchange is like, I have a degree in economics. Like, I have taken multiple healthcare policy classes, and I still occasionally want to break down in tears trying to figure out all the terms in there. So I'm really excited to have you on to help walk us through it. I think the first thing I want to remind listeners is that you're not expected to be an expert on this. And unfortunately, it's not quite like buying something on Amazon. You can't go read all the reviews. But at the very least, you can understand what the terms mean, or, you know, they're about as clear as mud. So, so first up, Jack, let's talk about all the numbers you're going to see.
Yeah, no, Lillian, I'd say you're not alone. Like, the health insurance it's so intimidating to people. And as you mentioned, you know, you have an economics degree, and Americans, we're really good at shopping for cars and cell phones and things like that. But we've seen a lot of, you know, brilliant economists and lawyers and attorneys and accountants. You know, when it comes to health insurance, it's like their eyes glaze over and roll back in their head. And it's like, what does all this mean? And, we found a little bit scary statistics, but, having a lot of choices on the exchange is great. But a lot of people make some common mistakes, and we found out about 90% of people actually choose the wrong health insurance plan. And I think that'd be, you know, where you're going a little bit, where we could talk about, you know, kind of what are the terms and what do they mean, and how do I not make those mistakes? What does it mean to choose the right health insurance?
Yeah, plan? I was going to say, so that people choose the wrong health insurance plan. What does that mean? As long as I have health insurance, right, I'm fine.
Right. And you know, actually having insurance, you know, it's still expensive. It's frustrating. It's still recommended, right? Even if you're, you know, young and healthy and invincible, you know, we hear stories all the time about, well, I didn't get health insurance and I broke my leg and I've got a $60,000 bill, and you know, you don't, it's not worth the risk still. But the ways, you know, the mistakes, you know, we see people make, a lot of it is preventable. People get caught up in insurance about the what if, and really it's more about the kind of what's going on now. As you shared, you know, with your rheumatoid arthritis, that's most likely going to be your largest expense for the year. So how do we plan and make sure that the doctors that you need and the prescriptions that you might take are covered by the health plan? We see a lot of people that, you know, they'll think, oh, I got a plan, but then they go to their doctor and they're out of network. And so they get an out of network charge, or they didn't understand how the prescription formulary works. So they see, oh, my prescription's covered, but you know, oh, I'm paying a lot more than I would have on another plan. Those are mistakes that are avoidable.
Yeah, definitely. Okay. So I've got three acronyms that I commonly encounter on the exchange, and I want you to define them and tell me how they impact me as a consumer. So I see HMO, PPO, and HSA.
Ooh.
So
there's even more acronyms out there. There's HRAs and FSAs and EPOs.
Let's start with those three.
Sure. Yeah, it is an alphabet soup. The first two you mentioned, HMO and PPO, let's separate those, because those are actually doctor network structures. So an HMO stands for a health maintenance organization, and they're going to be the least expensive plans you'll find on the exchange in general, because they're the most tightly controlled doctor network. Now what does that mean? That means usually you have to have a primary care provider, and to see a specialist, you're going to need a referral. A lot of people don't like that because it's like, well, I want to show up. You know, I want to be able to, if I need a neurologist or a cardiologist, I'm just going to walk into their office. But the reality is, most of the time, you're putting extra burden on the healthcare system that way when you access it without going to a primary care doctor. Now, a lot of people panic and say, well, I don't want to have to wait for a referral, and they have these stories from their grandparents and parents about never, ever get an HMO. The reality is, if you're healthy, like, HMOs have modernized a lot. You can get referrals over the phone, even by email or telemedicine. So that, depending on the ones you're looking at, it can be a lot smoother.
Yeah, I know. I had an HMO through my old job. I had Kaiser, which is one of the largest. It was actually the original HMO, and they're a big, big insurer here in Oregon. And what I liked about it was that everything was in the same building. So not convenient if the building isn't close to you. They have a couple in Portland, but I would get a referral and I would only have to walk down the stairs to go to the other network, and everything was online. So they had really good record maintenance because of the
Perfect. It,
you know, being integrated, which isn't, I think, true with all HMOs. But for Oregon listeners, Kaiser does have everything's very online, especially compared to the alternative PPOs that I've been on. So what is a PPO?
PPOs are called preferred provider organizations, and they're kind of on the opposite end of the spectrum of the HMO, where they give you the most flexibility to see any doctor you want. They have a concept of kind of in-network or out-of-network, but they still will provide out-of-network benefits. So you literally could walk into any doctor anywhere, and your insurance will help pay for something. But then, you know, if you back up and think about it from the insurance plan's perspective of, you know, oh gosh, you know, what if this person, you know, is ringing up all these bills and they don't really need it, or it's not necessary, or it's redundant, or as you pointed out, Lillian, you know, maybe they go to one provider here and then another provider at another hospital, and they have to run the same test because they're not on the same same network. You know, there's a lot more cost to it. So PPOs provide a lot of flexibility but they're definitely more expensive. And that's something we see a lot of people get trapped of, I need a PPO or I need a HMO. And I think really understanding the difference in how you would access healthcare, you're still going to get great coverage. There's still doctors to take care of you if you develop a condition. It's just kind of being smart about how you access the network and knowing what you just purchased.
Yeah. So one problem that I've run into, I've had, a lot of folks approach me that it's their first time using the exchange. They're young. They've been on their parents' health insurance. Mm-hmm. And they go, I've typed in all of my doctors and my dentist mm-hmm. and my optometrist, and I couldn't find a single plan that covers all of them. I go, well, mm-hmm. there's two problems with that. One, a lot of folks don't realize that almost all the exchange plans don't cover adult dental. And that's a Correct. Separate policy that you get. If you've, previously been on like a nice government health insurance plan or mm-hmm. your parents' very large corporate plan, it's possible that your dentist was not a separate policy. But generally, you never include your super specialty doctors, so vision and dentist, mm-hmm. In that list of providers. But then the other thing that I had folks run into is that they think that they need 100% of the doctors that they have been seeing to be in network. And, this mm-hmm. was the big hubbub, which was the Obama said you can keep your doctors. And in reality, that right. didn't actually pan out for everyone. And so what are the options if you find a plan that you like, the cost makes sense for you, but it doesn't cover one of your doctors? Mm-hmm. Is there, or your doctor's out of network? Are there options? Should you choose that plan anyway?
Yes. Yeah. It's a good question. And we have some good tips and tricks and scenarios. We've published at takecommandhealth.com. But, as you pointed out, most dentists and therapists and kind of the what I would call the routine doctors, are not going to be participating in the exchange networks anymore. And people will panic, but that's actually okay. And it's going to be better for you to pay cash in those situations anyway. If you think about, when you go to the dentist, and for this reason, we actually very rarely recommend individual dental insurance. If you're paying $30 a month for a dental policy and they're going to help cover your cleaning, where you can be savvy as a consumer is actually understanding the cost a little bit. The average cost for a dental cleaning with an x-ray and fluoride and everything is about $200. So if you add up in your head of like, all right, well, I get two cleanings a year and I'm paying $30, $40 a month and I have a $100 copay. I mean, when you add it all up, you're paying way more than you need to on insurance when you could just go to the doctor and say, hey, instead of filing it through insurance and having to go through all the hoops, why don't I just pay you $150 cash? Why don't I just pay you, $200 cash?
Well, and a lot of dentists will
also take it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. quite often they'll give you a cash discount as well. So, For sure. I don't have dental insurance because I'm very lucky to have good teeth genetics. And mm-hmm. so I don't have cavities. I just have to get the cleanings. And, mm-hmm. That most of them will give you a discount if you pay in cash up front. Right. Although one of the frustrating things about my dentist is they never seem to have change, but then they charge me an arbitrary like 140 and 35 cents or something and they have no change. Mm-hmm. So, make sure you have exact
That's a different
change.
Problem. Yeah.
That's their problem. Yeah. One of the other things that folks need to look for when they're looking for kind of those auxiliary plans is a lot of dental and vision insurance. Because I hear people saying this that are like, oh, that's great for you, but I got $10,000 worth of dental work last year. Like I needed mm-hmm. multiple root canals. But a lot of those dental plans have really low maximums that they'll pay.
Yeah.
So you need to keep an eye out for that. If you're thinking about it, you did the math and you're like, oh, I'm going to need, I'm going to need a lot of work. So it makes more sense to get this plan. A lot of those plans have like an $1,000 or $2,000 out-of-pocket maximum, which buys you almost nothing in dental work, unfortunately.
Yeah, or they'll have exclusion periods where you have to be on it for 2 or 3 years before they'll pay for a root canal or braces. It's kind of a rule of thumb. If you're doing the math on individual dental insurance and you think you need it, 99% of the time, you've probably missed something in the small print.
Right.
And I say that not to be discouraging, but we really don't recommend individual dental insurance. It's kind of a really bad payment plan or like layaway plan. Now, what we do recommend and where we can point people to are what's called dental discount networks.
Yep.
And this is where you pay a small fee on the order of magnitude of just a few dollars a month, $3 or $4 a month. And then you get access to all of like the large corporate negotiated rates. So let's say a dental cleaning is and fluoride and x-rays is $200. With a dental discount card, you get the big corporate rate and it's $85 or something like that. That's worth it. And that covers, that's going to help you with root canals, with braces, with everything right away. And it allows you to kind of join a group that's collectively bargaining with different dental networks.
It's pretty much like buying a coupon book.
Do what?
It's pretty much like buying a coupon book for dental. Like you've opened the coupon
exactly.
book and you can only go to the providers that are listed, but the networks are really wide for a lot of those too. And if you have a dentist that you prefer, you usually before mm-hmm. you invest in them, before you pay the couple dollars a month, you can look up and see if your dentist is covered by that dental discount plan.
Sure.
So you can, do the research ahead of time if you're really attached to your dentist. I'm not attached to my dentist, but I know a lot of people are.
Hopefully here she's not listening.
So part of this is just that I've changed insurance so much over the past several years that I keep moving mm-hmm. dental things. So now that I pay out of pocket, I can actually like choose who I go to. So we have one more acronym that we didn't cover, which is HSA, which is very relevant yeah. to if you have someone that is not covered in network, but you like everything else about your plan. Mm-hmm. HSA is one of the things that can help you cover that. Can you give mm-hmm. us a little background on that, Jack?
Sure. We love HSAs. HSAs stand for health savings account. The one, and people get intimidated by this and think, oh my gosh, it's going to be a ton to manage, or I'm going to have to budget, or I'm going to use it or lose it. And all that's not true. It's just another, imagine a savings account at your bank, and your bank probably has an HSA account they can set you up with, or takecommandhealth.com. We have a free HSA account. So don't pay big fees for it. And what it does is allows money that you put in can be spent tax-free, or you get a tax deduction for medical expenses. So it's an instant 30 or whatever your tax bracket is, it's an instant 25 to 30% discount on medical costs. We see people, waste a lot of money, if you know you have a condition, you have a prescription, or you have a therapist, and you need to see a doctor, we joke, we call it kind of laundering it through the HSA. There are services where, you swipe your HSA card and it'll immediately pull the funds in and it'll touch it for half a second, before being routed out to your doctor. But now you get it tax-free as a tax deduction versus having to, use your cash on it that you've paid after tax. So
HSA is an excellent strategy.
Discount people are leaving on the ground a lot.
Yeah. So HSA is an excellent strategy if you are someone that has a high tax rate. So that can even apply. You don't necessarily need to have a high income, but if you're self-employed and you
Correct.
Pay a, you pay your self-employment tax, HSAs can be a great way to lower your overall income, because anything that you save and put aside in that HSA is not mm-hmm. taxed, and you can actually just leave it in there. So at retirement age, it actually just converts to a regular account. You can only
Correct.
Use it for health expenses when you're under retirement age, but you can leave it in there. You can also decide to put money in that HSA and still pay for mm-hmm. things out of pocket and not necessarily pay for it out of that HSA account. So mm-hmm. and just leave that money in there, because you can actually invest that money if you want. So it kind of can act as like a second retirement account.
It is. Yeah, it actually has some real advantages as a retirement account. We would always recommend folks, make sure you have, at least 1 year's deductible worth kind of, solvent.
Mm-hmm.
But then after that, there's some really neat services now where you can invest HSA dollars like you would a 401k or something like that, and, buy stocks and bonds and mutual funds. And there's a great way to make that grow, and it rolls over each year. It's your money. There's no use it or lose it provision that some people think of with FSAs, some of these other acronyms. Most people that have, now the one catch to HSAs is you have to have an HSA qualified health plan. And there's some rules afoot, with all the healthcare changes going on to loosen those restrictions a bit. And if that happens, then everyone needs an HSA. Until then, though, you know, you do have to have an HSA qualified account, but it stays with you and it's your money and you keep it. Unfortunately, we see that about 70% of people that have an HSA qualified account never even open it. So they're leaving a lot of money on the table.
So that's a really important thing to know. So if you're looking on the exchange and you're looking at different plans, you can do the math yourself to see if it's HSA qualified. Just Google HSA limits 2018. But the easiest way to tell is that they will have HSA in the name of the plan. You know, if you're looking at, you know, Providence 1529 plan, it'll also say HSA if it's HSA qualified. And one of the reasons I bring that up is that if you're just looking at, so there's essentially a minimum deductible that it has to have to be HSA qualified right now. And there's also a maximum out of pocket. So some of the really cheap plans actually don't qualify for an HSA despite having really high deductibles because they have too high of an out-of-pocket maximum. And that was the plan that I was on, so I wasn't able to open an HSA. And there's also some other things, which is that, like, if it pays anything before your deductible, then it doesn't qualify for HSA. Mm-hmm. So instead of trying to do the math yourself, just look to make sure that HSA is in the name of the plan.
Correct.
On the exchange if you're doing shopping yourself, because it's really easy to get caught up because a lot of this is stuff in the fine print. Like, one of these plans didn't qualify even though it looked like it qualified just because it would pay for a $25 eye exam before you hit your deductible, and then suddenly it doesn't qualify. So that's really important if you're looking for an HSA plan. This is really great. There's two ways in which HSA plans are awesome for you. So if you are someone with a very high cost medical condition, so I have rheumatoid arthritis, my medication is $3,000 a month, I hit my out-of-pocket maximum in March of every year, everything is free to me after that. HSA plans are really great because of that, because most of my out-of-pocket maximum for me is covered by copay assistance for my drug, which is also true for a lot of people with, like, asthma or Crohn's or diabetes that have really high-cost drugs. The other way that an HSA is great is if you're young and healthy and one of those people that we were desperate to get insured because you don't cost the system very much. HSA is great for you because you're going to have low premiums. And if you have a high tax rate, you can open one of these HSAs and have a little bit of money set aside in savings. And if your tax rate is 25%, that money that you've set aside for your deductible, you essentially just got a 25% bonus of money to set aside. So those are really the two circumstances in which an HSA account can make a ton of sense. A lot of them cost hundreds of dollars a month less than alternative plans that are not HSA qualified.
We look at it, you know, the way we describe it, exactly how you did, Lillian. But, you know, when you're kind of balancing, you know, premiums, obviously, you know, lower premiums are probably going to mean a higher deductible or less copays. And you know, higher premiums can mean, you know, there's more deductibles and copays. Usually we want to tilt the favor towards definitely pay less, right? The premium is what you definitely have to pay each month, rather than definitely paying more for a higher premium. And then use an HSA or use the flexibility. Yes, it stinks if you're healthy, relatively healthy, and you do need to go to the doctor and, you know, you got to pay $100 or $150, you know, the full price versus having a $20 copay, but you gotta remember how much you're saving each month on premiums. And at least you're unless you're going routinely, you're going to come out way ahead at the end of the year. You know, on the flip side of that is what you described, where if you have arthritis or asthma, or you're managing a condition, you know, the calculation you want to do is actually how can I hit that max out of pocket as quickly as possible and in a tax advantage way as possible. And people, they'll think that, oh, I've got rheumatoid arthritis, I must need the most expensive gold or platinum plan. And usually that's not true. Usually it's going to be the high deductible bronze plan with an HSA. And it stinks, as you mentioned, Lillian, you know, the first 2 or 3 months, you're going to pay, you know, for the full amount. But then the rest of the year, you have a low premium and you've hit that max, so you're not paying anything else. Versus if you got a gold or platinum plan, you would slowly reach up to hit that max, and then you're saddled with the high premiums the rest of the year. So, you know, really trying to minimize what you have to pay each month in premiums is a great strategy.
Yep, definitely. Okay, so we've thrown around the term deductible and out-of-pocket maximum a lot, but we haven't actually defined what's the difference. Those are the two numbers that are kind of staring at you along with the premium when you're on the exchange. So premium is what you pay each month. Mm-hmm. What is the difference between deductible and out-of-pocket maximum?
Good question. And we actually see a lot of people, kind of back to the mistakes we see people make in surveys and in some kind of academic testing we've done. People overweigh the two numbers they overweight the most, and it's the ones that they understand, are the primary visit copay or primary provider copay, what you see when you go to see a doctor, and then the deductible, which is just to define the deductible, in simplest terms, you're going to pay everything up to your deductible, and then that's when your health insurance benefits kick in. So sometimes, and the max out-of-pocket is the most you'll pay before the health insurance company takes over for everything. So sometimes the deductible and the max out-of-pocket are equal. Mm-hmm. So you pay, let's say you have a $5,000 deductible and a $5,000 max out-of-pocket. You'll pay the first $5,000 and then nothing more. Sometimes there's a gap between those where maybe you have a $3,000 deductible and then something called co-insurance where you pay a percentage of the cost until you hit that max number. So that's kind of the simplest way to understand it. One of the mistakes we see people make is they panic over the deductible. They think, oh my gosh, and a lot of it has to do with how health insurance has evolved the last few years, where it used to be you got nothing before the deductible. Now with the way the marketplace works, there's actually a lot available before the deductible. So all your preventive cares are preventative visits are covered, you know, immunizations, well checks, screenings, all those are included, you know, before you hit the deductible. So a reasonably healthy person, they could access the healthcare system several times a year and never actually pay anything that would go towards the deductible. When they get sick or break their leg or are in an accident or injury, that's when kind of the deductible comes into play. So we'll see people think and artificially buy a very expensive plan that has a lower deductible when they don't really need it. And then those that do think they're getting a great deal, but they're not paying attention to that out-of-pocket max. And they end up paying more over the year than if they had just chosen the plan with the lower out-of-pocket. So we recommend people look at that max limit, because that's really, if you're trying to protect yourself against, you know, financially catastrophic event, bankruptcy, that out-of-pocket max is way more important than any of the other numbers. So look at that.
Yeah, and it's also very important if you're like me and you have a very expensive condition, because like if you know you're probably going to get hospitalized at least once during the year, because you have something that it's likely that you'll get hospitalized, that out-of-pocket max is really what you should be predicting your expenses at, because these things add up. One thing I do want to mention is that out-of-pocket max sounds like a really sexy term, because it sounds like it's giving you a really clear idea of that's the maximum that you're going to have to pay. But there are scenarios in which you will have to pay more after you've hit the out-of-pocket maximum, which are, remember that out-of-network, in-network situation. So if you are on certain kinds of plans, if, for example, you end up getting in a bike crash and you have to get your wrist fixed and you go to the hospital and, you know, I had wrist surgery. I don't even know how many people touched me while I was, touched my wrist, and I had an anesthetologist and a bunch of people.
And they all cost thousands of dollars.
It was like 2 feet stacked worth of envelopes of bills and explanation of benefits that came to my house over several months. And that they all were from individual people that bill you separately. And if one of those people that interacts with you is out of network, even after you've hit that out of pocket max, it's possible that you are actually going to end up owing money on top of that.
Yes. And it's kind of a sneaky trick. Well, I say trick. I'm sure there's some where there's ill willed thoughts included. A lot of times, you know, anesthesiologists just don't know, or the hospital will contract with them, and there's so many health plans and different networks that they don't line up. You know, you go to the hospital thinking you're in network, and all of a sudden you get these out of network bills. You know, where you can be as a smart consumer is making sure that your regular doctors that you want are in network, or you're aware that, all right, I'm paying my dentist cash, stuff like that, and know which hospitals are in network. And we've built some great tools at takemanhealth.com where you can actually search. Healthcare.gov has some limited features around that as well. And always the best way is just to call the doctor or look on the hospital website and see. If you do get a bill, though, let's say, and we see that scenario a lot where, hey, you did your homework, you went to the hospital, you went to the doctor that was in network, and now you get these anesthesiologist bills or these prescription bills that were excluded. There is a lot you can do. There's some laws in each state that actually protect consumers against that. And we have a great bill negotiation team at takecommandhealth.com. And we're happy to look at that for you and help an expert connect you and connect with you and say, all right, here's what you can do, and here's who to call, and here's what to file. A lot of times, people panic and they pay the bill. There's almost always some negotiation and wiggle room, and especially if you go to an in-network facility and they have a contractor that's out of network, there's a lot that you can do as a consumer.
Yeah, that's really important thing to emphasize is that usually the first offer for what you need to pay is not the final offer. And that generally, so quite often it's hospitals that people encounter this, and almost all hospitals have a payment plan system set up. And we've talked before about, luckily medical bills are no longer going to be affecting your credit score as of a couple months ago. But one of the things that you can do is you can negotiate a payment plan. Most hospitals, especially because so many hospitals tend to be religiously affiliated, they tend to be Catholicly run or something like that. They usually have a payment plan where you can whittle it down if, you've negotiated it down and you go, hey, I really can't afford this bill. You can come back to them and say, can I pay $10 a month on this $20,000 bill? And as long as you're paying that $10 a month on time every time, it's going to show up reporting as you are in good standing. And so you're not going to end up in bankruptcy on that bill as long as you talk to them. So this is one of the problems I see a lot of people run into is this stuff is so confusing and so frustrating. And like you probably had some traumatic thing happen to you, even if it's just that you had a child, but perhaps you had a really major crash or something like that. It's so stressful that people shut down and they won't open the mail and they avoid it because they're like, I don't have the money. I'm just not going to open the mail because I can't do anything about it. And quite often, just having a conversation can get you even often put on a $0 payment plan, or you can
It's huge. Yeah.
Yeah. Or and, you can get them to forget.
A lot of times, just the call alone, will save you 20 or 30%. Because you got to remember, the hospital's in a funny situation where they're trying to collect after they've done everything.
Right.
So
it's not the best business plan.
You actually have way more leverage than you think. We as a rule of thumb, and you're mentioning it, we say, hey, never pay the first bill. Never pay the first offer. Now don't not open it and let it go to collections. But a lot of times you don't want what is that guy's name? Dog the Bounty Hunter or whatever, like knocking on your door. But let it bounce around the system a little bit. If the hospital doesn't get something from you, they'll refile it with insurance. A lot of times the codes they might have filed with the insurance company were getting rejected, and that's why your bill is so high. It's worth, if you get a crazy bill, it's worth calling the provider. And if you don't want to do that, that's where, Take Command Health, our service is really designed for consumers where, hey, we'll do that for you. And we encourage people, hey, send in all your bills, and we'll tell you right away, like, oh, yep, you know what, you got to pay that one. Let's call this hospital. Let's call this doctor. It looks like these codes were wrong. There's so many places in the system where it can go wrong. And a shocking statistic I heard was that any medical bill that has more than two lines on it, so two codes or more, in other words, they did two things to you, 50% of those have an error. It is not usually in your favor.
Yeah, medical billing is, we've talked before about how credit reports are hard to read, even if you're trained in reading them. And medical billing is one of those things where people specialize in this for their entire career, just reading and dealing with medical billing codes. When I broke my wrist and I had, you know, I probably collectively spent maybe 20 to 30 hours on the phone dealing with all of those bills and with my insurance and negotiation. And I just had this moment of like, I'm sure rich people don't do this. Rich people must have someone that does this for them. And one of the frustrating things is actually that wasn't really true.
They're doing it too. It's the great equalizer is our health system.
I'm not sure that I would use that shorthand, but the great frustrator, perhaps, across all demographics.
Sure.
I mean, it's really awesome that at least you guys are able to kind of fill that niche for people because it can be really frustrating. Will, you're our test subject as our, you know, our target millennial. What else do you want to know? Because we've just thrown out a lot of questions about health insurance, but we obviously have only scratched the surface.
Oh, gosh. The HSA was a huge one. That's definitely something I'm going to look into more, especially as someone who's on a lot of contract work. I guess for me, the worry about insurance is addressing unpredictabilities. I'm planning on keeping my job. I'm planning on, you know.
Right. You're planning on not getting hurt. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, what would you recommend for people who are concerned about the unpredictabilities of life?
I mean,
sure.
That's for me. One of the things that I really recommend with that is we've talked about the emergency fund before and how powerful the emergency fund is. And one of the really great things about the emergency fund in an HSA is that if you're able to do that savings and get that extra benefit of not having to pay taxes on that savings, then it can really help with you are going to know that out of pocket maximum. Of course, that doesn't help with that scenario of an out-of-network person suddenly touched you in a hospital and now it costs past your out-of-pocket maximum.
Right.
But I think that one of the things is to really look at that out-of-pocket maximum and make predictions for just worst-case scenario predictions where you actually kind of work towards setting aside that money towards that out-of-pocket maximum. And, you know, hope it doesn't happen tomorrow. But that HSA rolls over year to year. So once you've built that up, you can kind of sit on that out-of-pocket maximum in that HSA, hopefully preparing for an eventual thing that never happens.
Right. Huh. No, that makes a lot. That's definitely something I want to look more into.
Jack, did you have anything to add to
point.
That?
Yeah, I was just going to add, you know, I think for Oh My Dollar listeners and how you guys, you know, are being thoughtful about setting aside emergency funds, you definitely want to be cognizant of you know, the health piece. You know, because your refrigerator breaks or something, you know, that you would, or your car breaks down, and you want to have those emergency funds to draw on. You know, being mindful of where that max limit is, or that max out of pocket limit is, and how much you have in your emergency account can provide just a lot of peace of mind. Obviously, if you have a health event, or you get in an accident, or your kid, or wife, or spouse, or whatever. You know, there's going to be so much emotional stress. You know, one thing you can do now is make sure you have that max out of pocket set aside in the emergency fund so that, you can focus on, you know, getting better or taking care of whatever you need to. And at least the financial part is one less thing, you know, that can kind of hinder your recovery.
And that is an important thing to mention. If the unpredictability of life, one of those things that you're going to be aware of the out-of-pocket maximum for is if you are going to have a child. So you're in a really awesome situation right now, actually, if you happen to be pregnant or your partner is expecting and you are shopping on the exchange because you have more information than the health insurance companies do about you about what your healthcare costs are going to be next year. Delivering a baby is the most expensive country in the world to deliver a baby in is the United States. And so be aware that that you are likely going to hit that out-of-pocket maximum on your insurance for the following year. And so just be aware of that when you're shopping if you happen to know that you are expecting next year. Which is really awesome because one of the previous things that was very frustrating is often you couldn't get insurance once you were pregnant before mm-hmm. the ACA came out. So that is one of the nice things is that now you can. I had one question about mental health. So, you know, for Oregon listeners, mental health is one of those essential health benefits. We kind of have because we're bleeding heart liberals in this state, we have some extra healthcare benefits in our exchange. Unfortunately, mm-hmm. our state is broke, so who knows if those are going to continue to exist. If you're not in Oregon and you want to get therapy or you want to have access to mental health benefits and it's mm-hmm. not considered an essential benefit, how do you make sure that you have access to them? When you're shopping on the exchange, what do you do? Where do you look? And if your insurance doesn't cover it, how can you pay for it?
It's a good question, Lillian. And you know, mental health is so important to a person's well-being. In Oregon, what's happened is nationally, mental health is considered an essential health benefit, but it's not as strong as it is in Oregon. In other words, Oregon and other states have kind of beefed it up. But let's say, you're in a state where it hasn't been enhanced. You know, there's still a few things, you should know, is that one, insurance still has to cover kind of inpatient and outpatient stuff. And they do have to provide, proof that there is, adequate access to those sorts of facilities. But what they can do is really minimize, maybe there's only a handful, really inpatient is the big cost driver. Mm-hmm. They may restrict it to only a few facilities. And so that's where if you or someone in your family needs some mental health treatment, being really mindful of who's in and out of network is going to be essential for you. No matter where you are, but especially if you're outside of Oregon and some of these other states. The other thing to remember we talked about too is kind of outpatient mental health. They do have to cover it, but as you mentioned, it's very rare to find a counselor or therapist that still accepts individual insurance on the exchange. I actually have a buddy, we're here in Texas, that does. And kind of the common practice here is you'll get a lot of new folks that are trying to build their practice, mm-hmm. will accept insurance for a little while, and then as soon as they, filled up their schedule, then they turn it off. so there are providers there. It's not going to be robust. If you're looking at a lot of kind of outpatient, or you go once a week to a therapist or a counselor, you may actually want to talk with them about, hey, what's a cash price I could use? And then use your HSA or use other ways to cover it where you're not kind of beholden to the limited networks that you'd find on the exchange plans.
Yeah.
Inpatient in network's got to be huge. You got to be in network or you won't get those benefits.
Yeah. And that can be, especially something like addiction treatment is very costly usually if you've got inpatient. Yeah. One of the places I get no kickbacks from this, but one of the main places that people search for therapists that you can actually sort by insurance network is therapist.psychologytoday.com. And they have little profiles and there on things. It's a marketing platform for therapists, but it tends to be the first place to go. And the nice thing is it does let you look by insurance, but I always recommend gut checking because some of the therapists will say that they take all the insurance plans, and then you find out that presumably actually your specific insurance plan isn't one of the things that they take. So do a double check, but they want your business if you're looking for a new therapist. And mm-hmm. so you can often, if they do have any relationship with your insurer, you may be able to negotiate for them to do your plan. So
for sure. And always call and ask too. We have a lot of situations in Texas. Blue Cross is a big provider here, and there's actually five Blue Cross networks. So people will call and most therapists, they don't know the details. They're like, oh yeah, I take Blue Cross, but it's not the one that you have.
Right, it's not the right one.
Not the right one. So you need to clarify, do you take the Blue Cross HMO Gold Network? And you can find that. Another way to do it is using services like you mentioned from that Psychology Today, to kind of get a hint or a lead. But then really the ultimate way is to talk to the provider and ask them specifically or to call the insurance company and say, hey, does Dr. so-and-so accept the plan I have?
Right.
Just to verify.
Yep. I think that's it. Is there any other questions? Will, I'm looking at you, Will, as our...
That's all I got right now. I mean, I've definitely got a lot to think about and figure out.
So if you're shopping on the exchange, we still have two more episodes before the deadline, which is December 15th. That is your deadline. You will not have an opportunity to get insurance for 2018 unless you have a change of life status, which essentially means you get married or you pop out a baby. It's really important that if you are looking for insurance next year, you actually hit that deadline by December 15th. And I would recommend going a couple days earlier because the website can break and you don't want to end
Please
up.
Don't
in
wait
a...
until the 15th.
It's going to be the slowest website ever on December 15th. If you have any questions, if you are confused by any terms, let us know. We're going to have experts on all month up until that December 15th deadline to answer your questions. But I hope this helped. And thank you so much, Jack, for coming on and answering all of these questions. We have taken up a ton of your time, and I think it will really help our listeners.
Oh, Lillian, thank you so much for what you're doing. And I think focusing on this as a topic, especially for, I guess the last thing I'd want to mention is, healthcare, it feels daunting, but you can be a good health insurance consumer. And it's so important for budgeting and your financial well-being. It's worth, if you're frustrated, it's worth finding help and taking a little time to figure it out each year.
So if people are interested in Take Command, where can they find you?
We'd love to help at takecommandhealth.com. And in Oregon, we'll have some alternative health plans. That's a whole other topic, but... we'll help walk through and if there's there might be some good options off the exchanges for you. And then we can certainly help with kind of the bill negotiation and some other things that we mentioned. So, if you have questions, you can email us or chat with us online. We have experts that are available to help all the time, help you make a great decision.
Thank you so much. Really appreciate your time. And have a lovely day.
Thank you.
I hope that gave you a little bit to think about, listeners. I know that shopping for health insurance can be frustrating and hard, but that wraps our show for today. We look forward to your questions if you have some. Our producer is Will Romy. Our intro music is by Aaron Parecki, and I'm Lillian Kerr-Bake, your personal finance educator and host. Thanks for listening, and till next time, remember to manage your money so it doesn't manage you.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.